The following is a paid program brought to you by My Philly Lawyer. The views and opinions expressed are those of the sponsor and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station and its management.
Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman, and this is your hour, 1 hour where you get to ask your legal questions and get an answer. You can give us a call at 215-227-2727. That'll get you into the studio where we're here to answer your questions. Good morning. It's Sunday morning. It's kind of overcast and slightly humid outside, a typical Sunday in July, the last Sunday in July, it's July the 27th. Folks, it's 7 a.m. and it's Court Radio, 215-227-2727. Let's talk about what's going on in Philadelphia and around in the news. A good friend of Court Radio's, Melvin Dorn, civil rights activist and community activist who was on Court Radio, has passed away. Pay our respects to Melvin and his family. Melvin worked closely with Cecil B. Moore and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. He died of a heart attack at the Einstein Medical Center, and we will miss him. City will miss him. Rest in peace, Melvin. 215-227-2727. We also have the widow of the man who died in a chokehold up in New York. Maybe some of you have seen that on TV or on social media. But the police were arresting a man in New York and put him in a chokehold. The man and stopped breathing. He was saying like five times, he said to the police, "I can't breathe. I can't breathe." They continued to hold him in the chokehold, and that man passed away tragically. Looks like his widow is set to speak and probably will bring an action against the New York City police for an unlawful and illegal arrest. And lastly, it's we had a horrific accident in Philadelphia involving a carjacked vehicle. A realtor was showing a house, and when she finished showing the house, she was leaving in her car. She was carjacked by three teens, it appears, who took the car on a joyride that ended in the tragic death of children in Philadelphia, and the realtor is in a critical condition. Those teens are being sought out by the Philadelphia police, and if you have any information, you certainly should give them a call. It seems like the kids will be found. Yeah, we're wondering where the calls are. 215-227-2727. Yeah, you know what, Monica? We've moved over to that new system down in Philadelphia. You know, folks, we moved the offices. We moved the offices over to the other half of the building. I might as well have moved to the other half of the moon. What happened was, we were growing in Philadelphia, and we needed new space. So we took we were on one side of the building mostly. We took the other side of the building, and this week we've officially moved over into our new quarters in Philadelphia. And when we were over there, we had a whole new phone system installed, a whole new computer system. By all means, if you're down in the city and you want to visit us, we're at 2 Penn Center on the 14th floor, and everything is all set up down there now. But we got a new phone system, and it looks like the call forwarding didn't move over with us, so we'll have to address that this week. But in the meantime, if you give us a call today anyway at 215-263-1003, that's our old Court Radio number that's still working, 215-263-1003, and you'll get into Court Radio today, just for today. We'll get the call forwarding worked out on the other one. 215-263-1003 gets you into Court Radio, where you get to ask your legal questions. So, David's out sick today, and I'm joined in the studio by a friend of mine, attorney Louis Small. Welcome, Lou. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
Lou is a graduate of Temple University, my alma mater, and a practicing attorney in the city of Philadelphia for a few years. But you know what, Lou? The thing that really makes you the most famous, and in my mind, and the thing that I've always, you know, I always knew there was the aura of Lou Smalls was, you know, as a young attorney, I had a fairly, you know, sizable motor vehicle practice. And I'd come up against an insurance company all the time, American Independent. And they'd say that company's owned by Lou Smalls, and he's an attorney. And I always thought, my goodness, what? How could an attorney have done this? American Independent. I fight with them all the time. It was such problems with that company. So that was like from the very for decades I've known you, Lou. That's why I said you're my friend. I mean, for decades. And I've also made a few bucks, suing the insureds of American Independent. But so how did you get involved in that? And what was your involvement?
Well, that's very interesting. What happened was, and I had a very active personal injury practice, and actually still do, in automobiles. And one of the attorneys who was working for me was a Russian. And he got me involved in the taxi cabs. At that time, they were self-insured in the PATSA plan. And the PATSA plan was actually bankrupt. And I wanted to be the administrator, the claims administrator. I thought I could certainly do a much better job, and so did all the taxi cab owners. So that we went to the PUC, and they were monkeying around with appointing me as the taxi cab administrator. They had no insurance at that time. It was a self-insured fund. Simultaneously, at that same time, Pennsylvania changed the automobile statute, which it made it much more conducive to write private automobile insurance, because they put in certain features such as optional UM, UIM, which was always a loser for insurance companies. They can never get adequate rate. And they put in limited tort. I should also add that my family was in the insurance business also, so I had a great deal of knowledge of that. So as those two things converged, I decided, well, I'll form my own insurance company. So I went out and started American Independent. I formed it. I financed it. I actually was the chairman of the board. We had professional management as far as running the day-to-day nuts and bolts of the operation. So we came out with a policy that allowed people to get their license and drive, also had an extremely low down payment, and predominantly we wrote policies that, as I said, allowed them to drive, so they were the cheapest policies, and people were not buying UIM, UM, which is uninsured motorist, underinsured motorist.
Yeah, that's,
and we're purchasing limited tort.
So that, everything you just mentioned is things that, you know, I have harped on my listeners at Court Radio. Don't ever buy a policy without uninsured and underinsured motorists, and don't ever buy a limited tort policy. But that was the kind of the hallmark of American Independent at that time.
Well, it was something that was geared for the public, because if you bought that policy, you could buy it for an extremely low down payment so that you can comply with this, with the state law, and have the ability to drive. And in addition to that, when you buy this policy without the frills, you know, it costs you a lot less. So it made it very easy for people to purchase insurance and to comply with the law.
Except for when they have the accident, then they're a little bit upset that they don't and oftentimes, and again, this isn't a reflection necessarily on American Independent. It's a reflection, I think, on the insurance industry, that folks aren't given a lot of information. And in fact, I'm not sure that the folks who sell insurance really know to the degree that I do, that I think people should understand. I don't think they really know what they're selling. As an example, recently I was talking with a fellow who's in the insurance industry because he was involved in an accident. He was in New Jersey, and I needed to explain to him the Deamer statute and why, even though he had a full tort Pennsylvania policy, as soon as he crossed the bridge, he became essentially limited tort, or Jersey's version, which is verbal threshold. He had really no understanding of that. So I think that where the law and insurance converge on policy coverage, that's something that insurance agents should really have the highest degree of knowledge about, so that they can impart it to the person who's purchasing that policy, so that the person knows what they're buying, or more importantly, what they're not buying.
Well, I would agree with you, Dean. I find that most people practicing, and of course you would find this also, personal injury, you say, what type of coverage do you have? And they'll tell you, I have full coverage.
Yeah.
So these agents use this term inaccurately. Full coverage means to them, basically, well, you're covered if you're sued.
Exactly.
Not explaining if, in fact, it's a limited tort policy, that, in fact, well, you can't sue. But as it, you know, as I said, what caused this to come about is when they changed the insurance law, the insurance premiums every single year were skyrocketing. Nobody wanted to write in Pennsylvania. Really, the only company for the most part that was writing was the assigned claims plan, rather, which was a state, which required a fairly high down payment in order to get insured. So there was a purpose for it, and I agree with you that there should be a better understanding from the public as to what they're buying, particularly in the Philadelphia area with respect to uninsured and underinsured motorists, which protects you. If you're in an accident with an uninsured or an underinsured person, then you can collect for your pain and suffering from your own company. Considering that maybe 40 to 50% of the Philadelphians are uninsured, this is coverage that, without question, you should buy.
Absolutely. And not coverage that American Independent, I guess they have to offer it. I mean, it has to be in a standard policy if somebody wants it. But it is, I can count on one hand how many American Independent policies I've seen with UM and UIM. Now, I think there's one or two. There's one or two policies with UM and UIM from American Independent. Folks, if you're listening to Lou and I, you want to talk to us, you want to ask some questions about insurance or our hot button topic, which I'm about to introduce, you give us a call at 215-263-1003, just for today, 215-263-1003. We got Karen from Northeast Philly, who's got a car dealership issue. Hey, Karen, welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. What's your question?
I don't know. Should I say their name, the car dealership?
Why not?
All right.
Listen, you can't defame anybody, because if you're telling the truth is an absolute defense. So whatever you got to say, say it.
All right, it's Rowley Motors. I just want to make it quick because I know we're on the line. My daughter, around the end of May, I took her to Rowley Motors in Northeast Philly over in Rising Sun. She purchased a 2008 Hyundai Sonata, and she traded in my old 2001 Lincoln LS and gave them $1,000. Okay, I don't know what the salesperson John did. However, when the bank called her, they was told that we gave $2,500 plus the trade-in. Now, he called us and said, can you come back in to recontract the deal? I talked to an attorney. He said, no. Whatever he did, that's on him. Now, we didn't take the car back. Now, he's trying to repo it, sending people to my home, trying to get the car back. Do I have any legal remedies to fix this? Like, because we didn't do anything wrong.
Right. And the answer is that you have to look at the contract. And I would say initially that repossession is the wrong avenue to take, that you're the legal owner of that car for the time being until a court rules otherwise. Will a court rule against you if there was a mutual mistake in the contract, like your daughter and he didn't realize that they put the wrong term down? Probably a court would reconstruct that contract. But then again, they may not. In the meantime, that car is legally yours, and repossession seems to me to be inappropriate. Now, all of that is prefaced upon the fact that I haven't seen the contract. So if there were a term in the contract, and this wouldn't be unusual, that said, if we've made a mistake on this contract, you agree that you'll come back and fix that mistake, okay? A mistake. And if you don't fix that mistake, we could take the car back. Now, I'm not suggesting it's in there, but I will say that it wouldn't shock me if it was in there. But the contract is what you have to go by. So you've got a document that they gave her and she signed in order to purchase that car. You need to read it carefully, word for word, line by line. If anything I've just said rings true, then maybe you need to go back up there. But, you know, that's kind of where you are. And if he did decide that they were going to sue you in a court, you may find that you'd lose on that issue, but that hasn't happened yet, And so there you go. Is that I think that answers your question, huh?
To help me some, but I just got to go back over that contract.
Yes. Yes, you do. All right. Thanks for calling Court Radio. And stay on the line. Monica's going to grab your address and shirt size. Gone. Sorry, Monica. Okay. Well, she was about to get a Court Radio T-shirt. She was efficient, though. 215-263-1003. Or you can call 215-263-1003. Okay. So, Lou, there's a reason you're here. It has nothing to do with American Independent. I took us on a memory lane trip there. Do you have anything to do with American Independent today?
No, I saw that a number of years ago.
Okay. Thank goodness. I'm still suing them every day. Well, not them personally, although I have done that too. I brought a class action against American Independent. So anyway, you're here because as an attorney, you were representing somebody who was in the news in Philadelphia recently, and that someone is Darren Mannon. And Darren was the young man, high school student, who got stopped. It was a stop and a frisk, and there was an allegation that the frisk was inappropriate, aggressive, illegal, and caused him to suffer damages. And that's how you came back into the news with your client. Where are we with that case at this point?
He, to fill that in, he was on his way to play basketball with his teammates from the Mathematics, Civics, and Science Charter School, an excellent charter school in Philadelphia. This is an all-A student, a 16-year-old. When he was stopped, he was also arrested. It was more than stopped, and he was charged with a felony, allegedly punching this officer or pushing the officer in the chest, along with other charges of resisting arrest, reckless endangering an officer, what have you. The charges ultimately were dropped, so he's will not have any criminal record, and that's what the main purpose was, to get those charges withdrawn so that he could go to college, could get scholarships, and play basketball.
So was an action ever contemplated or brought by Darren against the city of Philadelphia for this illegal arrest?
That's something that's on the drawing board.
Something
an action has not been brought as of this point.
Okay. Now, there was a grand jury convened on this matter. First of all, how did that come to pass?
There was a great public outcry regarding what had occurred, a tremendous amount of publicity, because the allegation was that once he was arrested by this particular officer, knocked to the ground, hit over the head with handcuffs, he was taken over to another police car in which a female, while searching him, grabbed his testicles twice, causing him to be injured, and was operated on the very next day. So that's how all the publicity actually came about. Now,
see, Philadelphia doesn't use grand juries very often. We have a charging unit. I don't understand. You know, why don't we explain to the listeners what is a grand jury?
A grand jury is an investigative tool that's implemented by the district attorney's office, so that they can subpoena people, bring them in front of a body of people that compose a jury, and they present evidence so that individuals would not have a right to not testify unless they had a legitimate reason to take the fifth. What happened in this case is that Internal Affairs, which is run by the police department, wanted to interview Mannon as well as his fellow teammates that were there. I was against that because the police interviewing the police, interviewing the individuals, I just thought that wouldn't be appropriate. So enough of a uproar was caused to try to get to the bottom of this that Seth Williams, the district attorney's office, called me in one day, you know, to discuss the case, and we agreed that there would be a grand jury, which would be hopefully impartial, and the testimony would be under oath in front of the grand jury as contrasted to some police officer interviewing him and taking down his statement, which may or may not be accurately taken, what have you.
Okay, so your representation, in essence, and your refusal to have your client testify in a unofficial capacity where there really wasn't control around, caused the district attorney to convene a grand jury. Again, folks, this doesn't happen in Philadelphia every day. Typically, the DA doesn't need to do an investigation of that sort in order to charge somebody with a crime. The police do an investigation, they talk to people, and the district attorney makes a decision on if and what crimes were committed, and they file charges, and you have a trial, ultimately, in the Court of Common Pleas, and you don't start out with a grand jury. But here, in this case, there was a grand jury. Now, at the end of the grand jury, the grand jury typically either recommends charges be brought or they don't. And in this case, what happened?
Well, they didn't recommend charges be brought against Aaron Manning, but they also didn't recommend that charges be brought against the offending police officers that were involved in the case.
Right. In your mind, does that mean that this particular police officer didn't do anything wrong?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, let me go back further with respect to grand juries. The testimony that's presented with respect to the grand jury, to a great extent, is controlled by the district attorney's office. And they're the only ones in there. Of course, I could go in with my client. I'm not permitted to say anything, although I could talk to him. The district attorney does the questioning. And the ultimate presentation to the grand jury, this body of people that are sitting there, is controlled totally by the district attorney's office. So that it's almost like a one-way summation of the evidence. You know, in any type of trial, whether it be civil or criminal, you hear both sides in a summation, which is extremely important. In a grand jury, you only hear the one presentation, which is brought by the DA, because defense counsel or other counsel is not in there.
Right. And do you think that I guess what you're saying is that you think the DA kind of took it easy on the cop?
I'm not there for all of the testimony. I was only there for my client's testimony, and I knew what the other charter school statements were saying. I think the presentation that was made, there were two separate incidents in this. The first is whether or not he was properly stopped. The second incident is after he was stopped and arrested, whether or not he was assaulted. So we have two separate incidents. I think the grand jury report dealt with both of them, but it favored strictly the police testimony because there was testimony from other charter school students which corroborated what Manning was saying, and yet in the grand jury report, at least it's transcribed, they only talk about those students with respect to the initial arrest but not about the subsequent grabbing of his testicles by this female police officer. In other words, with respect to those students, you don't hear their version. You only hear the police version.
Got it. 215-263-1003. We're talking to Lou Smalls about the Darren Manning incident with the police. Lou, because the grand jury didn't recommend charges against the police officer doesn't mean there can't be a civil case. Folks, when you have kind of the interplay of the criminal justice system and the civil justice system, it's certainly possible that there wouldn't be a criminal, that some activity would not be rise to the level of a criminal violation, yet still be a civil violation. When we come back from break, we're going to talk to Lou about whether there's a civil action pending and what that means and how the differences are between the civil and criminal, and we'll take your calls at that time. Give us a call at 215-263-1003 just as soon as we come back from this break.
If you have legal problems and need answers, call My Philly Lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first at 215-227-2727 for personal injury, medical malpractice, birth injury, and more. Call Dean first.
He will fight for your rights. That's what Dean Weitzman is all about.
Call My Philly Lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first. 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer. When winning matters most.
For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
The following is a paid program brought to you by My Philly Lawyer. The views and opinions expressed are those of the sponsor and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station and its management.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome back to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman and this is your hour to ask your legal questions. 215-263-1003. Let's talk to some of our callers. We got Ilette from Cheltenham. Good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Hi, Dean. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Ilette. Welcome to Court Radio. We got Lou Small here, and we're talking about stop and frisk. What's your question or comment?
And I wanted to say hi to Louis Small, too. He's my sister lawyer, Vanetta Bolden. Tell him hello.
Oh, hi. How are you?
All right. Anyway,
Vanetta, you got a great sister.
People think that I'm crazy because I'm always taking up for the cops. It's just that when me and my friend was in a car, I told him when the cop stopped us, because I think he made the turn too quick or something. Anyway, the cop stopped us. If you just be a little patient, just listen to what they got to say, give them your ID. I think if you give them a hard time, things won't go bad. But I told my friend, just don't get smart, you know, and don't worry, you know, you got a nice car, young guy. And I told him, just be cool and watch. And guess what? The cop let us go. He let us go. If you be nice and don't get a cop a hard time, they all not bad. Everybody be saying I'm crazy, but they all are really not bad.
Listen, I don't want to give the wrong impression here. If you got the impression that I thought all Philadelphia police were bad, absolutely, positively not. In fact, many of them are outstanding officers who do a tremendous job, a job that I dare say most people wouldn't want to do. Yeah. And they do it with dignity and professionalism. You know, but sometimes there's a bad apple, or sometimes on any given day, any of us are capable of doing some stupid things and things that are, if not illegal, improper, okay, and violate other people's expectations or rights. And oftentimes lawyers, we're looking at that. We're looking at the bad behavior on a given day. The question is whether police, because they're police and they have a difficult job, should be given a free pass if they step over the line. And so I'd say no. Like, they have to answer up. The city has to answer up. I wasn't there, but if this officer grabbed Darren's testicles so hard that she caused damage, she did something wrong. And if she did it right every other day that year and did it right every other day after that, Darren Manning should be compensated for the injuries he sustained when she did it wrong. That's all I'm saying.
You're right. Yeah, she should. And you're right.
All right. Lou wants to jump in, too.
Your advice to listeners is absolutely correct. When you encounter a police officer, you have to really cooperate with them and try to calm things down. You know, it could be a bad day for them. Now, if in fact you don't, you could rest assured you're going to be arrested and charged with assault on the police officer, whether or not you did it or not. Never look at the police officer's badge. So if you feel that the police officer has done something improper or incorrect, be as patient as you can, be as nice as you can, and then afterwards file the complaint when you're not under his control. Because if you start complaining at that time, you're going to run into a problem.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that it goes for, I would say that's probably not bad advice for, in most circumstances. I remember as a kid getting stopped. I'd purchased a car, and I had just purchased it, but it came from out of state. I think maybe from New Jersey. So it didn't have it had a Pennsylvania plate on it because I had registered it, but I had not gotten it inspected yet. Now the law allows you to have a grace period of, I believe, 10 days between the time you purchase it and when you need to go out and get it inspected. And I got stopped, and the police officer, giant guy, came up to the car and started screaming at me. And I said, "Officer, I'm in the middle of my grace period." Well, that was, I might as well have said, you have two heads. And he escalated the situation way past where it should have. What he should have said was, "You know what? You're right, but I had to stop you anyway. Go along your business." That was it. I mean, the stop wasn't the problem. His badgering me when he was wrong was. And I wasn't a lawyer yet, and I almost got my head knocked in. So, Lou, you're probably right. I should have just, he wasn't going to give me a ticket. And even if he was going to give me a ticket, I could have beat the ticket because it was a bad ticket.
Well, Dean, I learned in college that same experience, but in a very different manner. I used to travel down to Florida. I went to school down in Florida, and I would drive down from Philadelphia, and I had a nightstick, which was perfectly legal, underneath my seat. Well, I got stopped in Miami. This was a nightstick that was pretty nice. It was fiberglass, better than their wooden nightsticks. I get stopped, and this cop searches the car, and he says, "Hey, I like this nightstick," and he takes off his old battered nightstick, hands me his nightstick, puts my new nightstick on his belt, and says, "Thanks."
Wow.
Wait a minute. So I said, "Well, wait a minute." I said, "You can't do that." He said, "Oh, really?" The next thing I know, I'm up against the car handcuffed, and they charge me with failing to give the right answer to a police officer. I had to hire an attorney, and I had to apologize to the officer in court. My attorney told me to apologize to him, and then I got my nightstick back. So when I tell you the advice that I gave earlier, that make the complaint afterwards. Don't complain at that time.
That came from hard-earned
hard-earned experience.
Yeah.
And I've seen it any number of times. Subsequently, even when I was in the DA's office, I had been stopped, and I was an assistant DA, and of course that's different in that context because I had a badge. But when you're in their custody, watch out, and don't cause an uproar. That's my best advice that I can give.
Stay on the line. We got Monica standing by. She's going to get you your address and size, and we're going to get you a Court Radio T-shirt for being a listener and a caller today.
Thank you. And I hope y'all have a blessed day, and I love both of y'all.
Thanks, Ailette. Take care, dear.
All right. Bye-bye.
215-263-1003. Let's talk to Cynthia from Fairmount. Hey, Cynthia, welcome to Court Radio.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing great. What's
I'm
your question?
I'm calling because I wanted to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, my son was on 309, and a car tried to run him off the road. Well, he let it go. By the time he got home, a state trooper came to the residence and said that they had a report that he tried to run someone off the road. A lawyer was contacted. They went to court in Montgomery County. The lawyer was intimidated with Montgomery County, so told my son to plead guilty. None of my son's testimony or pictures of the incident was ever interviewed or displayed. Bottom line is they took his license for a year and made him pay a restitution fine. Now, he was an Amherst graduate prior to this. He went further to become a physician assistant. Now he's having a problem with employment because I need to ask you, is that a felony on his record since he pled guilty according to the lawyer? And well, he went to a board in Harrisburg for them to, I guess, pardon him or expunge it, and they denied it.
Okay. The answer to your question is it may be a felony. It may be a misdemeanor. Neither a misdemeanor nor a felony can you have expunged in Pennsylvania yet. I know that I'm talking with some politicians, and mm-hmm. I try to avoid that at all costs, but okay. I'm talking to some politicians who are putting forth a proposed statute to allow expungements to be extended to misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. But frankly, without seeing the charging documents, I have no clue whether your son was charged with a misdemeanor or a felony. If it was a misdemeanor and the law changes, then he stands in good shape to have it expunged. Okay. But a felony, chances are, it's not going to get expunged. And he's going to have to explain it and deal with it to the best of his ability without having it leave his record. And, you know, what you describe is, unfortunately, on the courthouse steps, you know, you're given choices, and sometimes the fear of being found guilty, even though you didn't do it, is so great that people agree to plead guilty to something that they don't really in their heart of hearts believe they did. Mm-hmm. But it is, he was an adult, his own free will, and he agrees to plead guilty and pleads guilty. It's hard at that point to say, you know what, I made a mistake, I didn't do it, and I know I agreed in court to plead guilty, but I want to undo that. That's not something that gets undone very easily, if at all. So anyway, I hope I've helped you a little bit. Lou wants to jump in also.
There is one other way to get it expunged.
Okay.
You can't, as Dean said to you, you can't do it through the court system if, okay. in fact, you've been convicted or pled guilty to a misdemeanor mm-hmm. or a felony at this particular time. But you can apply to the governor for a pardon.
Okay.
That process takes about 3 years. But, you know, you would go in front of various boards, and if, in fact, he's become a model citizen and you had the right political connections, hopefully, you know, you could get a pardon.
It sounds like that's what she was describing.
Week. Maybe.
And yeah. that's what he did. So it was a board of about, I think, 6 to 8 people.
Yeah.
And he,
yeah.
and see, the defendant, the plaintiff never showed up for the court hearing in Montgomery County, nor in Harrisburg. So am I wrong for thinking that that should be default?
Yes, you are, because a pardon is not your right. And so, yes, if you go to court and the defendant fails, you have a right to a jury trial. And if the defendant fails to appear and you try your case and the defendant fails to appear, there's no complaining witness, there would be no evidence or testimony, then in all likelihood you win by default.
She's the plaintiff. My son was the defendant.
Well, see, yeah, well, we're talking about two different things. Uh-huh. What we're talking about is that your son pled guilty, and in right. that action, he mm-hmm. was a defendant.
Okay.
And in the action of a civil action where the plaintiff files suit to recover damages, that's not criminal, and that won't, you know, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't stay on his record. That's just he has insurance, and the insurance ultimately pays for her damages. That happens every day in Philadelphia. And he, in that instance, he is a defendant as well in the civil action. So on either case, criminally or civilly, his name is defendant. And unfortunately, in the criminal matter, he agreed to plead guilty. So there didn't need to be any testimony. There didn't need to be a complaining witness in that instance, because he pled guilty. He agreed beforehand or at the steps of the courthouse, yes, I will plead guilty. And he acknowledged his fault, responsibility, and that's the end of that case.
Okay.
If he had said, I want to try this case, then if she didn't show up, I'd say the outcome would be far different. But that's not the way it happened.
Okay.
So in any event, you're right on point with getting a pardon. That's the what you need to do in that instance.
Thank you so very much.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk to Shelley from Philly, who's got a Darren Manning question or comment. Hey, Shelley, welcome to Court Radio.
Hi. How are you?
We're well, thanks.
Well, you know, my question is that, because I wanted to know if he was black, because this is my first time hearing about the Danny Manning case. And the young lady answered, and she told me, yes, he's black. And then my second question, will he be filing a a lawsuit against being racist? Because I felt that, you know, because of him being black and the way he was handled, it would probably be racist towards the police officer.
You know, you ask a great question, and it kind of segues into my next point I wanted to raise. There was actually a class action brought against the city of Philadelphia back in, I think, 2010, but it dealt with a period of time from 05 to 2010, maybe 2009. But there was kind of the second half of that decade, there was an action brought because there were too many and what the plaintiffs believed were illegal stop and frisks. Lou, what happened to that?
Well, that was an action brought by the American Civil Liberties Union in federal court. It was actually terminated. It was actually resolved in June 2011, and it dealt with the stop and frisk of, in particularly in Philadelphia, because it dealt with Philadelphia police. And it's predominantly African Americans, and there were a number of statistics that were presented to the court that showed that these stop and frisk occur primarily with respect to African Americans, and they tried to set forth some guidelines and parameters. In fact, the city did agree as to the methodology as to how these stops would occur, including that they would allegedly train these police officers to act appropriately.
Allegedly, he says yeah, that well, kind of.
I have a comment. My boyfriend, he's black. We're both Haitian. I was born in this country. He was not. Last year, he just finished school and he received his CDL license. This year, he started working as a truck driver. He was at Temple, PA, and DOT stopped him. The DOT didn't ask for, you know, inspection or whatever they normally ask when they stop you. The DOT said he's going to shoot him. He better sit down, confusing him. Because the DOT heard that he was not, like, you could when he speaks, you could tell that he's not from this country. The DOT threatened his life. And so my boyfriend said, oh, you know what? I am not doing anything. He said, I may not be from this country, but when you say you're going to shoot me and I'm trying to comply to you and listen to whatever you say, my boyfriend had to actually ask someone from the street to please call the police because he was fearful for his life because, like, he wants to comply, but the DOT didn't make any sense because every time he was going to get out of the truck to let him inspect, the DOT said, I'll shoot you. And he said, you know what, I am not doing this. This is, you know, not going to happen. So another person called the police. The police came by, and the DOT gave him so much crap tickets, and he threatened. He said, oh, you're going to lose your license. You're going to lose your license. You're no longer going to be working. So we went to Temple Court. That DOT officer didn't appear in court. And the judge said, listen, the next time something like that happens, you need to make a complaint on the DOT.
Yeah, you know, well, and see, Shelley.
With black people, it's just like, this is way too much.
Yeah.
We're in 2014, and you would think that this should be like a different era in our life.
I agree, and I think that you kind of are talking about what Lou and I were talking about earlier, and that is that in those circumstances, And I'm not denying that there is definitely an element of race involved. I absolutely believe that. But I also think there's an element of compliance, like utter compliance. You know, on any given day, somebody with a badge and a gun and has authority over you on that stop, on any given day, they lose any sense of reasonableness, and the slightest exclamation that you might understand why they stopped you, or that you want to give an explanation, anything like that, you're totally reasonable. It's taken as being completely unreasonable, and the situation escalates very quickly. Lou was arrested and detained and handcuffed over what sounded like nothing. Like, you know, the cop tried to get over on him and Lou was standing up for his rights. I got stopped when I was a young kid, and I knew that the stop was okay, but the officer was, you know, screaming about the fact that I didn't have valid stickers on my car, and I knew I was in a period of grace period. And so, again, it's, you know, those are the circumstances where we all need to just try to be as compliant as possible and then make the complaints afterwards, so that, you know, your boyfriend was no doubt absolutely correct in whatever happened that day. The problem is that he was complaining to the wrong person. He was complaining to the person who had a gun and who was stopping him, and he should have just waited, held his breath, and then gone in and sat down with that person's supervisor and made a complaint. And you know what? A lot of times that then causes a mandatory investigation for that officer, and a kind of a strike against them on their record. And if there's enough people, if it's really a bad apple and there's enough people making a complaint against the officer, then I think eventually something will happen. Because if it's just an unusual circumstance or your boyfriend was wrong, then this guy's not going to have any complaints against him. But if this is a bad apple and he really is too aggressive too quickly with a lot of people, then there might be 20 or 30 complaints. So that's, I think, great advice by Lou. Hold off and do your complaint into the officer's supervisor after the fact. Thanks for calling Court Radio. And Shelley, have a great Sunday. Stay on the line and Monica will get your shirt size and address to give you a t-shirt. Hold on. Folks, we're going to take a real quick break to pay the bills, but we'll be back in 2 minutes and we're taking your calls. 215-263-1003. Court Radio will be right back.
If you have legal problems and need answers, call My Philly Lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first at 215-227-2727. For personal injury, medical malpractice, birth injury, and more, call Dean first.
He will fight for your rights. That's what Dean Weitzman is all about.
Call My Philly Lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first. 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352. The following is a paid program brought to you by My Philly Lawyer. The views and opinions expressed are those of the sponsor and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station and its management.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome back to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman. I'm joined in the studio with Lewis Small, who was the attorney for Darren Mannon, the young man who was involved in an aggressive stop and frisk with the Philadelphia police and allegedly sustained damages as a result. We're going to talk to Lou in a second, but let's talk to Devin from Northeast Philly, who's got a question or comment about the Darren Mannon case. Hi, Devin. Welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, Dean. Hey, Lou. Name's Kevin. Sorry about that.
I'll beat Monica later. Kevin.
Sorry. So I have an observation followed by a question. And you guys were talking about how when you're around an officer, you have to tread lightly, walk on eggshells. And it just seems weird how, as a citizen, you have to be the mature one with a police officer who seems to have a personality disorder. And I don't...
I like that, Kevin.
Yeah, and I don't buy it that it's a few bad apples. I think it's a systemic thing that's going on. And my question is, short of video recording bad behavior and posting on YouTube, how do you really report it? Because a lot of times with officer-involved shootings, where there's an investigation, what's it, like 95, 90% of the time, no charges are brought against the officer. And when people go to the precinct to file a complaint, they get harassed. They say, let me see your identification. They harass them. And nothing really comes of it. So how do you really pursue trying to get some justice from the people that are supposed to protect us?
Well, Kevin, that was one of my concerns. I could give you some statistics. I understand that 99% of the complaints that are made to the police are disregarded. So that's why I was pushing for a grand jury on this. And you're right in what you say. So that if you go in and you make the complaint and it's disregarded, your only other alternative is to try to get yourself a private attorney and to sue them civilly if, in fact, the attorney and you feel there's a case or there's some damages involved. And, of course, it's expensive to sue them. It's not easy. So it is a problem, and it goes back to even this consent decree with respect to the Philadelphia police that there was supposed to be appropriate training. And I could tell you that I've been on other radio shows and what have you, and there are –
Other radio shows?
Yeah, sure, there are other radio shows. But anyway, there's, talk shows. There's any number of people that experience this problem, particularly in the African-American neighborhoods,
right,
where people are afraid of, for the most part, of the police. And then you have to question, well, why are you afraid of – why should you be afraid of the police? And the police
Lou, I'm white, and I'm starting to get scared of the police.
Well,
seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my very first cases that I tried in federal court was a police brutality case. An unlawful arrest. And, I tried the case at arbitration in federal court. We won. And we got, I think at that time, jurisdictional limits were $75,000 for federal arbitration. So we had $75,000 and the city agreed to pay it. My client, unfortunately, wanted something unreasonable, actually, in light of the injuries, which weren't all that substantial. But she wanted to take an appeal. I took the appeal. We ended up in federal court with a jury, and we lost. A federal court jury is being pulled not from Philadelphia solely, but from Philadelphia, Bucks County, Montgomery County, Chester County. It's coming from the outlying counties. And so, unfortunately, it's a very conservative jury pool. And it's difficult to win those cases. You know, it's my experience is that juries, on the civil side now we're talking about, because that's what I do, I'm a civil trial attorney. On the civil side, juries want to give the benefit of the doubt to the police officer. And so you have to go in with really good evidence. And the only way you're going to have good evidence, unfortunately, is if you have really catastrophic injuries. Because then they can see and appreciate somebody who's gone over the top, I think. This is just
Dean, one person's
opinion.
Right. I mean, my other thing is, I mean, you go on YouTube, a lot of people, you know, people talk about Big Brother. I think Little Brother's coming to affect people with their phones recording the police. I think that's the best way to combat the brutality, bring in transparency. I think they really need to get the video cameras for the police to wear. One place they instituted it, they had a 90% drop in complaints against police. That's insane, a 90% drop. And it's just, once that camera starts rolling, they act completely differently. So, yeah, I agree with you, the catastrophic injuries, definitely, but
yeah,
get more cameras there.
Absolutely.
People need to record this.
Can you imagine if every officer was required to wear a small pin on their chest, and in the pin was a camera, and everything that they did during their shift was recorded in a central location that they couldn't control. I absolutely believe that we would see a different behavior by the officers, more professional. 215-263-1003. Kevin, interesting points you raised. Stay on the line. I'm going to get Monica to get you your address and shirt size, get your Court Radio t-shirt, and thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Hold on. Wow, we got so many calls here, Lou. Let's grab another one. Marlene from Bensalem, good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
So what's your question, Marlene?
Well, I just had a comment. As a parent of a young black man, this is what I always tell my son. When you see the cops coming in your direction with their lights on, you have to assume that they're going to try to arrest you. That's what I've seen throughout my whole life.
Okay, so that's probably good advice. And what's the next piece of advice? Stop? Cooperate?
My next piece of advice would always be just don't do anything other than what they tell you to do. Don't do anything. And he's already had that experience. I mean, for almost a little bit of nothing, they've almost, well, they haven't destroyed his career, but thanks to Mr. Hobson, one of your employees, he's helping us with his case. It's going to be, you know, taken care of, but still, my son would do a whole lot for a little bit of nothing.
There you go. That's typically the way it happens.
And the last advice that is, and your advice is very good, particularly don't run from them or flee from them, because that just gives them another excuse to come over and frisk you and search you and harass you.
Thank you.
Marlene, thanks.
I just had a comment.
Thanks for being a listener to Court Radio. Thanks for being a client of My Philly Lawyer. Stay on the line.
He is wonderful. Thank you.
Stay on the line. We're going to have Marlene, we're going to have Monica grab your address for shirt size for Court Radio.
Thank you.
All right, hold on. Yeah, this is unfortunately a common experience by folks in the Philadelphia area where they have to interact with the police. Unfortunately, some of these scenarios don't really go very well. And I wonder statistically how many complaints have been filed. You say 99% don't get responded to, I wonder, are we dealing with 100 complaints a year or 1,000?
Are you talking to the police themselves?
Yeah,
I have no idea how many complaints there are.
Yeah. They have a whole department, obviously, that is tasked with doing the investigation on police behavior,
internal affairs.
Right. Yeah. All right, let's talk to Paulette from West Oak Lane. We're last caller, Paulette. What's your question or comment?
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks.
My question is, I have two sons, one in their 20s and one in their mid-30s. And both of them always tell me that they're constantly being stopped by the police for one thing or another, nothing, you know. And I try to tell them, well, just listen to what they got to say. And, you know, I just don't understand why this is happening and what can we do to prevent this, because it happens all the time. I mean, I didn't even know until we got into a conversation one day, and both of my sons were saying, well, yeah, the cop stops me all the time.
Yeah.
So I want to know what can we do to, you know, alleviate this.
Again, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but Lou had some good advice in the beginning of the show, and I think it's worthy of repeating. If your son or sons are stopped and they believe the stop was unnecessary or improper, they should make a complaint after the fact to the police. Not at that time, but after the fact, and keep a record of it. And if you think it's really warranted, then I think you need to talk to the attorneys over at My Philly Lawyer. We'll be happy to talk to you, try to see if a cause of action exists. You can always reach us during the week at 215-227-2727. Unfortunately, we're all out of time. I want to thank Lou Small for coming out and chatting with us about what really is an important topic for Philadelphians. Thanks. Have a great day. Thanks for being a listener to Court Radio. Lou, thank you for coming out here today.
My pleasure.
And folks, we'll see you next Sunday, same time, same place. Have a great week.
The preceding was a paid program of MyPhillyLawyer.com.